You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Michigan's primary is just a couple of weeks away on August the 7th. With us now, Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, who is seeking the Republican nomination. Lieutenant Governor, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you, Cynthia. Thank you so much.
We're going to start with the environment. Garrett Ellison of MLife recently reported that a Department of Environmental Quality employee named Robert Delaney wrote a 93-page report that spelled out his very, very deep concerns about per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, PFAS. Now we know about it. He was warning of a significant exposure to Michigan citizens and ecosystems and spelled out 15 recommendations for a state response. And that was 6 years ago, and that alarm was largely ignored. And we know now, as of last November, Governor Snyder created the PFAS Action Response Team, MPART. And now the state has a PFAS effort underway. But how do you feel about the fact that 6 years passed since that report and that warning?
You know, what is truly extraordinary is that Michigan is one of just three states still that is keeping this nationwide problem or making this nationwide problem a priority. We were pretty surprised to learn when the issues arose here that there weren't even any federal regs, only guidelines on this in terms of what acceptable levels are. So I think what it really came down to is just a matter of the areas that are highly regulated and had regulations on are the ones that get the most priority. And for whatever reason, even to this day, Cynthia, there is not a federal EPA standard on what the appropriate levels are, what the safe levels are for PFAS. We've had to develop this these regulations here in Michigan specific regulations, but military bases and airports all across the country, those areas potentially and probably have these same problems. And so just dealing with it as aggressively as possible is important.
But does it bother you that 6 years passed? I guess I'm wondering, what would you say to people who are now finding out that they may have been drinking that contaminated water for all those years?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's what's really upsetting is that there is no standard. So it's like the idea of you've got this report that comes out for a substance that the EPA didn't even feel it was necessary to even have a standard. And so I think that's really the difference. We find ourselves as having to develop the science in the first place to even determine, like, what is a safe level? What's the level when an alarm bell should ring? There's no consensus on that. So that's Michigan is on the front edge, amazingly still on the front edge of this compared to other states around the country. And I think that eventually everybody else will catch on, but this is something that is a big, big problem. And we put substantial resources into standing up the testing labs and doing the finding out how big the problem is and where it is. And the thing is, the rest of the nation is going to really benefit from the work that we do here, because it's going to show them the way to figuring out what are the issues in their areas too.
I think to some you think of the DEQ response, and it may bring for people to mind the response of state officials when people in Flint were trying to convince them that something was wrong with the water. We remember the MDEQ spokesman saying everyone worried about Flint water can just relax. And it took citizen activists and Dr. Mona, Dr. Edwards, the EPA's Miguel Del Toro to get the state to admit the water had been poisoned. What do you say as you're out on the campaign trail to people who, when they think of the Snyder administration, immediately Flint comes to mind?
Well, first of all, obviously there are huge problems at the local level, at the state level, at the federal level, failures at every single level of government. One of the important lessons I think to take out of Flint is when people say they have a problem, the default should be just to believe them, right? I mean, and maybe it's a misunderstanding, or maybe it's a difference of opinion on things, but still to stay at the table and get those things resolved. And so I decided that, as opposed to everybody else looking back, because listen, there's no shortage of people that like to look backward, point fingers, you know, cast blame and to fight and argue about the past. I moved my office to Flint. I'm not in the chain of command for emergency managers, so I felt I had an opportunity to go to Flint and be and just work on the future. Didn't have any, you know, part in the decisions of the past, so I could just be with people shoulder to shoulder, roll up my sleeves, and work on infrastructure.
And with all that work you've done in Flint, Lieutenant Governor Kelly, and you put a lot of time on the ground in Flint. What lessons from Flint and that response would you take into the governor's office should you be elected?
Two things. I mean, we have a lot of information now looking back to the two main lessons. First is when people say they have a problem, default to believing them, right? That's just, that's number one. And it's just a, it's a basic premise I think we should go into, even when the experts disagree, even when the experts say, you know, actually they don't, there's not really a problem, but they don't understand. Now stay at the table and resolve it. The other thing is, don't let the bureaucracy get away with technical answers to plain questions. You know, so if you were to ask somebody, as did get asked, you know, hey, scientists in the bureaucracy in the federal level, or the state level, people say they have a problem with water in Flint. Is it okay? Is it safe? And they say, well, according to the most recent samples of Tier 1 sites, the test results show that the lead results are within the federal lead and copper rule. Now, that kind of sounds like they said yes, but they didn't really say yes, did they? I mean, is the lead and copper rule the right rule in the first place? Were the samples done properly and correctly? Were the, maybe it's still under the limit, but are the trends looking good or bad? Is it trending in the wrong direction? There's a lot of additional questions that that should be asked in those situations. And for most of us who aren't scientists, you know, plain questions, we have to make sure that plain questions get plain answers.
Continuing on an environmental note, the state is now taking public comments on that independent risk analysis of Enbridge's Line 5. Dr. Guy Meadows and his team at Michigan Tech calculated the damage a worst-case scenario would have on the Great Lakes. As much as 400 miles of shoreline could be harmed, and the cost to Michigan could be nearly $2 billion. What do you think should be done about Line 5?
We'll shut it down. And the nice thing is that there's a we did a feasibility study. You know, what are the other alternatives? Because you still, you know, still need to get oil to refineries, and obviously shipping it by truck is not a feasible alternative. And tunneling far below the bed of the Great Lakes, you know, a dry tunnel where you could walk through it and do visual inspections on the outside, but having it, you know, 100 feet below the lake bed is a feasible alternative. And the thing is, Line 5 is in the water there, but there's actually many lines that run through there. And while they're not oil lines, they have coolant fluids and things in them. Why not put them all into one tunnel? And all these companies, you know, they get the benefit of a line so they can pay for it. But ultimately, there's a we know now that there's a feasible alternative, and I believe we need to start moving toward that right now.
Now, environmental groups will point to the fact that could take 10 years. Can we afford to risk that for 10 years while this gets this process gets decided on and in the engineering and the building of that tunnel done? Can we risk that?
I don't think that, first of all, it doesn't have to take that long. I would definitely call on the partners in our in the federal government to step up that work. I mean, everything with, that requires federal permits does seem to take a long time, but it doesn't have to. Number two, in the meantime, I am advocating for additional safeguards. So first of all, the reporting requirements have been stepped up, and in the meantime, the passing the regs on ships going through, and you know, an anchor hook or an anchor strike is really the main risk that was identified and something that could cause a problem.
And something that happened this year.
It happened this year, and thankfully it didn't. You know, it only was superficial damage to the line, but who knows? I mean, that's the thing. And so I'm envisioning a system like air traffic control. Every single airport in the state and the nation, before an airplane can land, they have to radio in. Am I good to go? Can we land? I'm picturing then why not when freighters go through there, freighters that have the type of anchors that could go that deep and are heavy and could cause damage, before you're cleared to go through, is your anchor up? Yep, anchor's up. Okay, you can go through. You know, that sort of thing. I think that there are, we don't have to overcomplicate it. You know, sometimes the low-tech answer is the best answer. In the meantime, while we're finding the other, I think we already have found the other alternative, but while we're making the other alternative happen.
Lieutenant Governor Kelly, last week we learned that Michigan is the only state in the nation that needs federal intervention after it failed to meet federal special education requirements. What do you think's going on here?
Well, I'm so thankful to see finally some attention to this area. I felt like a voice in the wilderness for the last 8 years on it. There's so much attention on general education, but not on special education. And so as I put the task force together to improve special education, I mean, Cynthia, we had to start with You're not allowed to lock kids up in seclusion rooms or tie them up with restraints in non-emergency situations. That's when we first started. That's how bad it was, and even then, we're still, the practices inside schools. So while the test results in that are obviously very concerning, unfortunately, that is not the worst of it. I mean, the practices inside of schools and the way that kids with disabilities have been treated for generations is absolutely appalling, and that's why I've made this my mission in life. So we've made we outlawed restraint and seclusion practices, and we also went forward with state supportive early on for early identification, hopefully kids that don't need to go into special education, and then also positive behavior interventions and supports that the trainers helping schools develop better practices. So I view this as there are two steps to it. We have to help schools with behavior management, and that's the area that if you don't have behaviors in a good place, kids can't learn. And so there are two steps to this process, and I'm really focusing intensely on that first step of helping schools be more effective with behavior management so that kids could even have access to the curriculum in the first place.
Lieutenant Governor Kelly, I think it's probably an understatement to say that the atmosphere in this country in 2018 is, to say the least, polarized. If you become our governor, do you think you can build consensus and not only work across the aisle, but also be a leader for more than the base?
I have been a consensus builder the whole time. If you look at the work that I do and the way that I do the work, I think the reason why I don't get as many invitations to come on shows like this is because I'm not an in-your-face, confrontational kind of a person, right? It's not as entertaining, maybe, but I am effective in getting things done and making it happen. And the only way I can be effective is by bringing people together. We have a very, very diverse state. And we don't need more people out there fighting for this or fighting for that. We need people working hard, bringing people together and delivering results. And if you look at the major things that I've worked on, whether it was major tax reform, two different rounds, the coalitions that came together to support those major rounds of tax reform looked radically different one from another. And because there were different issues and different people came together to solve the problems. And then but it's autism insurance reform and mental health reform, criminal justice reform, all of these different areas where I've worked, it was only possible to make headway because people came together. When we can find ways to do that, go out of our way to do that, to be intentional about understanding where another person comes from, we'll have better results.
Paul Egan of the Detroit Free Press described the race you're in, and I'm quoting him here, one of the fiercest and downright nastiest gubernatorial campaigns in recent Michigan history. If you don't win the nomination August 7th, would you have any reservations about endorsing the winning candidate?
First of all, I'm going to win. Second of all, yeah, when it comes right down to it, when I look across the field, the issues with the Democrats and the issues with the Republicans and overall, all four Republicans are better than all three Democrats, in my opinion.
Well, as far as for the nomination, so would you have any reservations about endorsing the winning GOP candidate?
Yeah, the winning, that'll be easy because I'm going to be the winner.
Okay.
But when it comes down to it, I think that regardless of who comes out of the GOP primary, that that you look at the issues and the record, that they're all stronger and better and they're in a better direction than all the Democrats are proposing.
Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, thank you so much for spending time with us on Stateside.
Thanks, Cynthia.